ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 72 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 28th of January, 2022. I am Conal O'Moran. Episode 72 of a weekly podcast means that you could now binge listen to us non-stop for 3 days, and that's music to our business ears. Please, please like and share us on LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks to the many, many of you who have already done so and continue to do so. It's commercial gold for us. So, this is the What Are You Worth episode. You've seen the newspaper supplements telling you how much homes are worth. Because we do business differently, we decided to tell you what your job is worth, like the software sales reps under 30 years old earning, wait for it, €250,000 plus, and locum pharmacists charging 3 times their usual hourly rate, and recruiters being offered twice their usual basic salary to move in-house. Stay tuned, as they say. Also, a Fiat Punto was once Ireland's best-selling car, then it all went pear-shaped. Fiat has now merged with Peugeot, Citroën, Opel and Jeep to form the vast Stellantis car-making supergroup, and they're fighting back. We have their prize fighter in studio. And sea swimming was a thing during lockdown. That led to the rise and rise of dry robes. Today we bring you Orca, the Irish for dry robes. All of these great insights, including your guide to leveraging more pay, is brought to you thanks of our sponsor, DeFacto Shaving Solution. Man or woman, it's the best anyone can get. Buy it right now on DeFactoShave.com.
That Great Business Show.
Money is something that feels intensely personal, especially as it's too often wrapped up into how we probably feel about our own self-worth. Few people are open to friends, not even to their families, about how much they earn. But in Finland, any stranger can find out. Every year, on November the 1st, it's dubbed National Jealousy Day. Every Finnish citizen's taxable income is revealed and is searchable by anyone. The annual orgy of financial voyeurism remains an important national event in Finland, according to one article I was reading. Today on That Great Business Show, we instigate Ireland's National Jealousy Day because we're going to reveal as much about salaries as we can in the next half hour. And who better to ask about salaries than Sigmar Recruitment? According to their website, they employ 150 industry experts. They have offices in Dublin, Cork, Galway, Sloan, Tralee. They've won 50 plus awards for excellence and that kind of thing, which all means they're good, they're big, they're knowledgeable, and most importantly, they're here. Rossa Mullally, director with Sigmar Recruitment, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks for having me, Conal.
Rossa, how much do you earn?
Not enough. If we're talking about National Jealousy Day, I get jealous often. I get jealous every day seeing the salaries out there. So I have a strange relationship with a lot of the people that I meet, and the fact that I have to ask them quite bluntly and quite early in the, you know, quite early in the foreplay, for want of a better word, how much do you earn, to get straight down to it. And it's interesting to hear the different levels across the different industries. It's a strange question to ask, and it's a strange question to know how to ask and when how to ask it and know when to believe it. And I'll come back to it in a second.
But tell me, how do you ask it? I mean, it's just a straight question. John, Mary, how much do you earn?
Well, you wouldn't say that. You know, you would ask, first of all, depending on what they're in, it's like, how much is their basic salary, of course. You know, so you always want to, there's certain numbers out there that get inflated or deflated depending on what you're talking about, you know. So when I was in school, it was like I got 13 Easter eggs, you know, back in the 80s. Now, probably kids these days do get 13 Easter eggs, but I was always wondering, it's like, I only got 2. Like, what's wrong with me? Then you realize when you get older that they're not getting 13 Easter eggs. So when you're talking to people, when you're asking about the basic salary, it is, you have to gain their trust first. They have to understand that it's not the first question we'd ask them, you know. And then we'd phrase it in a way, once we feel that we've gotten their buy-in, once we've gotten their trust, and then we'll break it down into kind of all the earnings that they could be possibly including. Because often when you ask somebody, you know, what they earn, they might say, just for simple maths, because don't do it live on the radio, I make 100K, and it's like, okay, but I know the industry, so I know you're not on 100K in my head. So I'll ask, well, you know, do you have a car allowance, factored in there, or a pension, or this or that? And we'll eventually get down to the real.
So we're
real
all big fat liars, is that it?
Pretty much, yeah. Everybody inflates. Everybody tends to inflate the figure, and I'd certainly question your friends.
And one of the things you said, because as you raced in here, you said you are super, super, super busy in the industry. Everybody, we know this from the podcast every week, people are saying we cannot get talent. We cannot get people to work. We cannot. And there is this hype about wages and salaries going through the roof. True or not?
True to an extent. Like anything, that there, it's true, but it's not as true as some of the horror stories or some of the more salacious stories, which lead you to believe.
We love salacious.
Like, I have examples of people who were maybe in their mid to late 20s, and I know for a fact that they're earning close to $500,000.
Ah,
you know, close to $500,000.
Doing what?
Usually, drug dealing. Usually tech, usually software.
Half a million.
Oh, they could be under 30.
There's a lad in there called Mark McCarthy who's listened to this, and I think he's going to just walk straight out and retrain.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly a sector that's worth getting into. There are other people.
Half a million,
yeah.
And how long would that last?
Depends on the company that they're in.
Wow.
You know?
In Ireland?
In Ireland, yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Usually US tech companies, and okay. they're usually in a sales role. Salespeople make more than anybody. Like, it is, people, I don't really like sales. I don't want to get into sales. If you like money, definitely get into sales. You'll earn an awful lot of money if you are lucky. But like everything, they're the outliers. Like, I could say podcasting is fairly lucrative. You know, Joe Rogan makes a decent living out of podcasting.
You could say that, all right, and he makes a big fat living out of it. It don't happen in Ireland, I can tell you.
100%. So there's outliers in all of them. It is true that we've been busier than we've ever been. I'm in recruitment 16 years. I'm in Sigmar 16 years. It's funny, I was explaining to my dad what I do, and he said, what do you mean you know I help people change jobs? And he had the same job. He worked in the printing industry and retired in the printing industry in the same company, and he said, people change jobs these days. And I said, yeah, they change jobs all the time. And he said, well, you don't. And I was like, that's not the point, you know. But other people change jobs quite a lot, and that's where we get into it. And more people are changing jobs than ever before, and more companies are looking for people to hire than ever before. It is almost certainly going to last for about 6 months, this level of activity in the market. I'm 16 years in the company. I've never, and it's not even close, I've never seen it busier. The IT team, I was talking to the divisional manager, a guy called Owen, who runs our IT division in
that's
Sigmar.
IT recruitment now, yep.
Yeah, in yep. Sigmar recruitment. I was talking to Owen today, and they have more jobs being called in by companies so far in January than they had in all of 2021. Now, the IT industry and the tech sector wasn't really hit by COVID as much as other sectors. So it's not a kind of a false figure in any sort of way. It's a bit like fluid dynamics, though, Cunnell. And we all know what that is. You learn about it when you're five out the back, when you have your thumb over the garden hose, and then suddenly you release it and the water goes squirting out. So we have 2 years of normal attrition. People leave their jobs. People get fed up. They want to move on. And there's a standard level of attrition, or a usual level of attrition in people in the marketplace. Everybody stopped during COVID because everybody was afraid that they might lose their job if they were lucky enough to have it. Nobody was moving. At the same time, a lot of companies stopped hiring because of the uncertainty in the market, or maybe they couldn't get people to travel. And this has caused, there's a couple of different factors involved in it as well. But all of a sudden, you've got now all that pent up attrition, all that pent up kind of, you know, desire to leave and desire to move on, coupled with all of this 2 years of hiring that was going to happen anyway, all of a sudden we scramble to make the hires right now. So, like, this is where we're seeing people who are on 90,000, who are changing jobs, looking for 100,000, which is a 10K increase, of course.
That's 10 on 9, which is not going to be a massive increase. It's not the big, big, big jump.
No, but getting offered maybe 110, because the company knows that they have to maybe go above and beyond, and then them handing in their notice and being offered maybe 140 to stay. So there's somebody who's gone from 90 to, you know, maybe 140 by not even leaving their jobs in some cases.
And are these outlier word, are these outliers, or is this happening a lot?
Those sort of figures would be outliers, but it is true to say that pretty much all sections of the workforce are their salaries are increasing. That's but the salaries increasing probably more like the actual rate is between 5% and 15%. In reality, so there's a lot of hype out there. There are great stories. There are stories that will shock, you know, potential employers. But the reality is it's more reasonable. It's probably more in line with inflation, and it's certainly not going to be sustainable with some of the levels that we're seeing.
Now, we want to know what the neighbours are earning. So let's go through some of the sectors. And just because you sent these through to me, I'm looking at accountancy. An accountant starting out is on...
Starting out, they used to be on about 40, but now some of them are looking for 50 or 55, possibly even 60.
And that's post... Qualification. Okay. Yep. And that's a bit of a jump, isn't it?
But not everybody can get it. And this is the issue. The title for the podcast should be "What Do You Think You're Worth?" for the moment, because an awful lot of people
we think we're worth a lot of money.
Yeah, everybody thinks that they're worth more than they are. And I like to think about it as like the California gold rush. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people made a lot of money, but the vast majority of people didn't make as much money as they hoped that they would have, you know. There is an expectation sometimes people out there where they go, oh, I'm on 40 and I want 60,000. And the reality is for most of them, it's not going to happen. You know, like there's.
But I thought with accountants and accountancy that the big Facebooks, the Googles and all the rest of them were just hoovering those people up because they were useful in other outside of the straightforward auditing, etc. type of business.
It depends on what they're looking for. Those companies do hire across a broad spectrum of people, but they usually typically go back to the specialized function, you know. So there will be people like engineers and accountants are always great people to hire because they're smart. They've studied a hard science, they can figure out things and they can get things done. So they always have been in demand from all sorts of companies. The bigger companies, the bigger tech companies, yeah, they can offer sometimes salaries to people, but again, can they attract people to come to because of, having a name and having a brand is one thing, but having the work that's going to be fulfilling to those people is another thing. So money won't, you can buy talent to a degree, but it doesn't solve every problem.
When you're standing at the bar trying to impress people, it's much more impressive to say, oh yeah, I'm working with Google than it is that I'm working with Jackson Accountants or whatever. I hope there's no Jackson Accountants out there.
That's objective, and I have to be careful about companies that I talk about.
Yeah.
It depends on how people, it comes down to this. If you like the people you work with, you like your job. You could be working in the biggest branded company and hate your job because they don't provide a great culture or the job isn't meaningful for you. And often an awful lot of the motivations when people come to me are usually the same thing. They're not challenging their work or they don't like something about the culture of their work. They're the main drivers, and that can happen in any organization. So having the brand or having some of the benefits that these companies have when you walk in, they're like a 5-star hotel and they're great, but they're temporary and they won't solve fundamental problems of actually enjoying your work.
Now, we're having the chat, but we need to have the figures. So I'm going to allow you, because I couldn't possibly imagine that you're going to have all of this in your head. Lash through various big sectors, the sectors that you know that one are big, as in wide, and a lot of people working there. And secondly, the hot ones, please.
So like in IT is probably the biggest and the hottest sector. And the reason is we don't have enough people in IT in Ireland. We don't have enough schools teaching it. You know, we're mandatory teaching some subjects and they're kind of
careful. Don't go to Gaelic.
Yeah,
that's
No. But like, say, you know, you're mandatory having to study some subjects that would have questionable influence later on in life. When IT should be arguably on the curriculum for some schools, especially the earlier you get into it, the better. We don't have enough people here, and because of remote working, we're losing potential. We're losing more potential candidates to other countries.
Are you seeing that now? Because this is a thing that I keep imagining and I keep talking about, is that people must have walked off the pitch, non-Irish, come back home to Poland or Estonia, wherever they want to go, and we are losing their talent.
100%, yeah.
Would you see a lot of that?
Yeah, like there's not enough IT developers in Ireland. There's not enough people in the IT sector in Ireland, and most of the people that we end up recruiting are from Eastern Europe, where they've done a brilliant job, like Czech Republic, Slovak, Poland. They have excellent, really, really talented software developers, which means there's a shortage of software developers here. So supply and demand, you're talking a senior software developers, maybe 100 to 120K, and they're the midpoints. They're not the outliers. They're more like the midpoints.
My problem about all of the, when you start rattling through these job titles, I've no idea what they do. You know, I literally do not know. Do they go around with a screwdriver or whatever? I have no idea. Sad.
It is. And I wouldn't give you, be able to give you much information on some, what some software developers do, except that they develop software, you know. Yeah. But app development, app testing, usually these sort of things, API, and, you know, your interface.
Well, I can throw those words out, but it still doesn't mean. So tell us again about their salaries and how much are they going up?
They'd probably be going up. Outliers again aside, one of the examples I gave earlier was nearly 50%, but probably more like, you know, between 10 and 20% for in the software sector. But it's all that has always, the salaries have always been high. You've seen probably greater jumps in early areas such as quantity surveyors. So with quantity surveyors, it is nearly name your own price.
Is that post the collapse of the building industry, or that they all ran away?
They all ran away, and then they stopped. It stopped becoming an attractive course to do. Like there was property everywhere, and nobody was building, nobody was going into it. So of course, now that we've had another property boom, another construction boom, we don't have enough.
And that will continue for quite some years for anybody listening.
Absolutely, and it's probably a long term course or a long term to do in that senior.
So what are they on, the QSs?
QS is at least 70,000.
Is that post-college, directly post-college, or that's a couple of years under your belt?
They'd probably need a little bit of PQE, post-qualification experience there, but if you know, 2 or 3 years and you're at least on 70K. Newly qualified would be more, maybe like 50,000, 55,000, but walking straight into a job where you're earning 50,000 or 55,000 isn't...
That's not bad.
Certainly didn't happen in my day, so yeah.
Not here either. So another one. Choose whichever, I don't mind.
We'll talk about say the pharmacists, which was an interesting one. That was COVID delivered. That was kind of COVID. That was a response to COVID, because you couldn't have as many pharmacists in the shop. You had to. There was only one pharmacist allowed in the shop at the same time. You have to have a qualified pharmacist in the shop at the shop and the pharmacy at the same time and all the time. And a lot of pharmacists then would say they deselected at the start of COVID because they didn't necessarily want to be exposed to COVID as well. So it really kind of threw the market into flux. So you were seeing maybe people being able to command 3, sometimes 4 times their own salary.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It is, yeah.
That will not, I mean, obviously it can't last because COVID hopefully is over. So is it back to normal again now?
You'd see a lot of the people elected, they left kind of your permanent pharmacist job and they went as locums. And now they've probably started to revert back to permanent pharmacist job. But locums will always earn more money because this job uncertainty, you have to be able to move around and you have to work when everybody else doesn't want to work. So there is that element too. So there is a premium attached to working as a locum like that. Recruitment, I can talk about that because that is an area that is in high demand, obviously.
I believe you work in it as well.
I work in it, yeah.
Has anybody tried to headhunt you?
No, surprisingly.
See what I've done there?
You see, I know, yeah, but surprisingly not. Everybody I work with, yes, but not me. So I don't know whether I have, they're put off by my, you know, kind of potato head or something like that. You know what I mean? But not really. It doesn't happen. But, they're in really high demand. There's no better time to be a recruitment consultant. Most companies are crying out for people, but more and more companies are then crying out for recruiters to join their firm. So this is an area where we'd have direct experience of people doubling and even maybe doing two and a half times their basic salary to move in-house.
I have never worked out, what does a recruiter need to have studied, or what qualifications does a recruiter need?
None, technically, right? So but there is an apprenticeship program, and it's the second professional apprenticeship program we've had in this country. Insurance was the first, and we're kind of following the lines of the financial services industry where you didn't have to have any qualifications. Actually, I used to work in insurance, would you believe, before I got into recruitment. But you started studying for your QFA exams or whatever the equivalent is now. Now, we do have the National Recruitment Federation. You do have to be, like, it is wise to be credited with it. You don't legally have to be a member of it, or you don't have to be qualified by it, but technically you could start up a recruitment company yourself tomorrow. But we do have, there is the first apprenticeship course run by the National College of Ireland, where students, school leavers can, you know, learn as they learn, as they say, and they can study and learn and then become fully qualified.
School leavers, happy days. Yeah. You hear that, parents? Jeez, get on to it, quick. But of course, again, actually, we need 176,000 new jobs, or we will be looking for 176,000 jobs, I think, according to Goodbody Stockbrokers, over the next 2 years. So I don't know where we're going to get those people, but recruitment looks like a hot area for the next couple of years.
For the next couple of years, like everything, it's a bit, it can be cyclical. I've seen the ups and the downs, but ultimately, it doesn't really change. Good people have always been hard to find. When I'm presenting to companies about talent and how to find people, I always show them your Where's Wally or Where's Waldo picture, depending on where you are in the world. And they always say, yeah, that's what it's like to find talent. And it's true to an extent. But what they forget, though, is that's what job seekers now see when they look at the marketplace, because there's so many people out there. So companies need to up their game and have a different message to really try and compete and attract for the talent when they're trying to hire them.
Marketing is a hot area.
It is a very hot area in regards to that a lot of people want to get into it. It isn't the most lucrative area to join, though, which is great for the marketing companies, so they don't have to pay ridiculous salaries. All the salaries that I've mentioned there are not necessarily what people are worth. It's just what they're able to command, given the supply and demand of the sector. So at marketing, everybody wants to join marketing. And, it's one of those jobs where I think that it changes over time. When I first got into recruitment, it was medical sales reps. You know, everybody wanted to be a medical sales rep. Maybe after watching Dope Sick, they don't want to.
Of all of the things I could probably think of, that would not be very high up on the list.
You know, 10, 15 years ago, that's the one that everybody wanted to be in. Okay. Now it's digital, it is digital marketing. And we say digital marketing, it's all marketing. Everything's digital now, you know. Yeah. But there is a huge supply of candidates. It's a huge supply of courses. There's a lot of online courses you can do. And there's an oversupply of people wanting to get into marketing. Again, like some of these roles, I think it's, if we were in marketing, they'd imagine us sitting around on beanbags, drinking coffee, coming up with great ideas and having the life of Riley. But like any job, it's really hard work. You have to be talented in it, and you're also competing against an awful lot of other people who also want to be marketeers as well, which means that, the salaries aren't going to be as high. So you wouldn't see the crazy numbers that we're seeing in other sectors.
So go back to your list and tell me some more crazy numbers or crazy sectors.
Sectors.
What's your own area of recruitment?
Sales, tech sales.
Okay, well, talk to me about tech sales. That's the one that you mentioned at 250,000. Ooh, wow.
In software sales, which is the areas that I focus on, I usually work with companies that are ramping up or expanding into Europe. Ireland's a great place to do business. We're English speaking. They come over here. We're quite aligned with their culture compared to, say, some other European countries. And now we don't have the UK to compete with anymore, which is great if they're planning to expand into Europe. Those companies will come in and they typically hire huge volumes of people to generate leads for their sales staff and then sell. Like if they're over here, they're selling. That's what they're doing. And then they'll hire all the other support functions. Some of them are fantastic companies. They've created apps that you'd use every day that you couldn't figure how you could survive without them. Like, when's the last time you have to ask anybody for directions? You know, thanks to Google Maps or these things. But these companies then they've got a lot of money to expand. They really kind of changed the game in regards to how employees should be treated. They brought in benefits. Like 20 years ago, a benefit was a pension, maybe a life insurance policy. That was it. Maybe a company car if you had to travel. These are the guys who brought in, your pizzas on a Fridays, your free bars, your swimming pools, your nail bars, all of this
dry
stuff.
Dry cleaning.
Everything. Yeah. Dry cleaning. Babysitting allowance. Yeah. Babysitting allowance. These things. So if you join the right company, and if the company had the right trajectory, the right kind of growth, you could you're entering into a fairly greenfield marketplace. If you're not a Me Too kind of, if you're a unique app and a lot of companies see the need for it, you could make an awful lot of money selling software. Now there's other companies then that you kind of struggle to find out what it's, it's like, I get that what that app does, but do we not already? You question what the hell it does. But some
you
of these
should be advising the venture capitalists, because now you're thinking the way they should be thinking. Is, I mean, it's a great idea, but nobody's going to use it.
Well, there's definitely a lot of that. There's some of those companies going around where I always kind of think that if it takes more than 15 seconds to explain it, then what does it really do? And sometimes it doesn't really do anything except get sold. Yeah. And what I mean by that is the company gets sold. The VC pump it in, say, hire loads of people, hire 200 people, and then we'll sell it and we'll say that it has 500 staff.
So what are you telling people to get into software sales?
If you want to make money at the moment, that's where I'd go into. What's booming back now as well is general B2B sales. So like office supply sales, that's again boomed. It's going back up. There's a huge demand in it.
Hang on a second now. We were talking about digital a few minutes ago. Like, does anybody go B2B for office supplies, or do you not just click on whatever store and just click and collect or click and deliver?
Yeah, that is an option, but it depends what you're buying and it depends what your setup is, you know. And it's not, say, maybe it doesn't lend itself maybe to some products that you're going to buy, and you need to see it, you maybe need to feel it, you need to sit in it, whatever it is. And so yeah, we're seeing a big demand in these areas.
That's very interesting. And I don't even know, are there that many companies in Ireland doing that kind of work? I know, say, companies like Bizquip and all, but
there's quite a lot of them.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's, like, every sector is really taking off. In sales, like, if you think about it, if we look at everything here, it was sold. Absolutely everything, whether it's the soundproof window there or the microphones or the carpet, somebody put it in as well, somebody had to fit it. So if you kind of take a look around, nothing gets there by accident. It's all sold. It all had to be delivered there as well. So
we're going to run out of time, so I'm going to ask you for one or two just weird, obscure things that you've come across to say, either keep away from that or absolutely keep an eye on that area there. Either sector, job, whatever. Anything that's, you've got a young child, I think. And what are you saying? It's a she, I think. What is she thinking of doing? I know she's very young.
I've two, actually.
Sorry.
Yeah, Aideen, I think, is, she's very artistic. I'd love for her to get into something creative. And I would generally give this advice to all young people. Do something that you love. You'll enjoy it more. Do something that you love. And if you can make some money out of it, you will have a much more fulfilling career than making a lot of money and doing something that you hate. I'm not too sure what Killian wants to do. He needs a bit more figuring out there.
These are very young children, I think, are they?
18 is 8 and Killian is 15. So
okay,
he's getting
a little bit older.
He needs to start having a proper think about it soon. You stay away from maybe print journalism. I don't think there's much of a future in that. But most areas are taken off. And again, there'll be jobs that I guarantee I probably won't even understand or know of the word that my kids are, you know, for the title for the job that they're working for. The law have completely changed, you know.
When you're in the pub or driving down the street or whatever you do, and you look at a guy and you say you find out that he's in, I don't know, mergers and acquisitions, can you just look at him and say, I know what you're earning?
I'd have an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have
an idea.
It's
kind of interesting, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's a different view on a person.
Yeah, but I suppose, but you get used to it and you get desensitized to it as well. So it's a bit like maybe, I don't know, a surgeon, you know, going, oh, I've seen the insides of somebody that I operated on. And yeah, that's pretty crazy, but like, it's just part of the job, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Now, you know, the last question we ask all of our guests is, who would you, Russell Mullally, hire in a heartbeat?
Yeah, I almost forgot about this, and then I was thinking about it on the way in.
I told everybody about it.
But no, I did.
I now put it at the very top of the email because everybody forgets.
Rick Stein.
Now, there's an interesting guy. I love him.
Yeah.
Why do you love him?
I think he seems like a very charismatic person, right? So, and I really like his it kind of feels like you're hanging around with him while you're on the show, and I'd love to actually meet him. But why would I hire him? Like, he started off as a nightclub owner. He then saw the opportunity and quickly moved into becoming like a chef, and then he suddenly changed his life again. So he's very agile. He obviously has a good business sense on him, so he knows how to make money. He knows how businesses run. He seems quite charismatic, and last but not least, he'd be able to you know cook some really nice lunches in the canteen if all else fails. So
for anybody who doesn't know Rick Stein, and you should, he's got a fantastically gorgeous series about Cornwall on BBC because Cornwall is where he lives. He's not from there; he's from Norfolk, I think.
Yeah,
but he is fantastic, and as you say, successful. My God, I looked him up to see exactly how successful. You know your salary survey? Well, he's at the very top of it, I can tell you.
I have a funny feeling I wouldn't be able to afford him.
Well, he seems like a nice guy, as you say. So Rick Stein, I think you're hired for Sigmar, or maybe as a personal chef to Rossa Mullally.
Either or, whichever one he's into.
Rossa, thanks so much. There is, I mean, you know, there's about 1,000 or 10,000 types of jobs we could cover, but I think we get the impression that there is huge demand out there. And if you want to hire people, Sigmar Recruitment is a good place to go, isn't that right? You better shout out.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing is that, like all recruitment agencies, but Sigmar is especially, we have a fantastic salary survey, so you can go and look it up, and the salary guides there are up to date, and our new salaries will be out. If they're not out already, they'll be out very, very soon.
Great. Rossa Mullally, Director of Sigmar Recruitment, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Viscosity. When you shave, you want the highest viscosity because it helps the blade run smoother. DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, has incredible viscosity. That's why DeFacto leaves your face, underarms or legs nick-free. Higher viscosity makes blades last longer. DeFacto is the best for your skin and your pocket. DeFactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRedCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with five-star customer support. BigRedCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
Ahead of my next item, I was looking up to see what were some of the greatest business comebacks of all time. The top 20 list I was looking at had Apple in first place when Steve Jobs came back and started to rebuild what is now the world's most valuable company. But interestingly, four of the comeback kids on this US list were motor manufacturers General Motors or GM, Ford, Chrysler and Tesla. In Ireland, once upon a time, Fiat had the best-selling model in the country. And then things went south. Now the family-owned Gowan Group has taken ownership of the Honda, Fiat, Alfa Romeo and Jeep franchises. And we'll find out in a minute why they're now known as the Stellantis Group, because joining me now is the man newly charged to sell all of these cars, John Saunders. Welcome to That Great Business Show.
Good afternoon, Connell. How are you?
You sound like a man who's about to be shot. Is the job that hard?
It certainly has some high mountains in front of us and to traverse. But look, it's exciting. It's engaging. We have a fantastic team back at base in City West. And we've been working on the project for over 2 years now to make sure the conditions were correct. Everybody inside now is hugely excited. These are phenomenal brands, huge heritage, huge recognition. And our job now is to translate that into good market share, and build a sustainable business. We're the entire Gowan Group is all built on good, sustainable business.
No pressure, so.
Yeah.
How do you sell a car? I know it's a stupid question, a silly question, a basic question, but if you're selling a car, be it a Fiat or an Alfa Romeo, and Kia or Hyundai are selling a car, what differentiates you from them?
Yeah, I suppose it's what attracts most of us to the motor industry in the first place and keeps most of us in there through the very difficult times. But ultimately, purchasing a car from a customer's point of view, it's hard to quantify, but you can't get past passion. And I think the challenge we have now as we transition from traditional power-based passion, you know, I wanted a car with a bigger engine and I wanted the car that won such and such a race or featured in motorsport. It's the technology is new. The technology is, it's traditional car buyers maybe struggle to recognize the technology, whereas younger incoming car buyers, they have a completely different approach to car purchasing. But they recognise the technology much more so. So that's our challenge really is to traverse the gap between traditional, as we call them, ICE engines, internal combustion engines, into new low emitting hybrid and electric vehicles.
Now, I love my cars. So when I was a boy, I used to love even the rasp of an engine. I could tell you with my eyes closed what any car anywhere was. Oh, that's a such and such and it's a blah, blah, blah. However, now, and you're talking to me now about how you sell a car, the technology is more or less the same. Bigger and bigger batteries, and let it go, pal.
Yeah, and again, it's the crux really of the Stellantis project. So Stellantis is just coming up to a year old. It's the merger between what was the PSA group of companies, Peugeot, Citroen, and then they bought GM in Europe here, so they bought Opel and Vauxhall. And then they merged 12 months ago with the FCA group of companies, which was headed up by the Agnelli family. So that's Fiat, Alfa Romeo, Chrysler in the States, and the Jeep brand. So the motor manufacturing has changed so much now, and the pressures, particularly in Europe, to meet emissions regulations are forcing motor manufacturers to develop new technologies around EV and batteries, but they can only do it with economies of scale because raw materials are extremely expensive. So the Stellantis piece allows each of those individual brands access to common raw technology, so common platforms. In Stellantis, it's about 14 brands in total. So brands we mightn't see here in Ireland, like Lancia and so on, Dodge and Ram and Stealth.
Again, is it?
No, it's only available in left-hand drive. So again, these small niche brands.
But it used to be here.
It used to be here, yeah. But
used to love the rasp of that engine.
Yeah, yeah. It's again, the passion lives. It's, you don't have to scratch too deep with people of
a
not too old
age
to find that bit of passion, yeah.
But yeah. What you're telling me now is that they're all going to be the same box with a different badge.
No, they'll all be the same platform. And then this is the really interesting piece. You take a brand like Alfa Romeo. So Alfa Romeo will be positioned a performance premium. So that will be their position within the suite of brands. So what does that mean? It may take the raw material from a base platform, but it will then apply its steering dynamics, its suspension dynamics, its aerodynamics, its raw aerodynamics, and then its styling. And then it will appeal to a customer at a different level. Traditionally, Alfa Romeo was built on the original Boxer engine, and people knew that different technology from a straight inline 4 or V6 or V8 and all those traditional internal combustion engine configurations. Now, absolutely, it's
an ever-ready battery.
It's a very big ever-ready battery. But the application of drive motors, one per axle, one per wheel, one per corner, whatever that may be, there's still great scope within that for a brand to stamp its own identity on it.
I'm going to give you 2 or 3 minutes of your own on this, because what you really are here to do is to sell me the electric Fiat 500 or the Fiat 500 electric. What's its correct name?
It's the Fiat 500 electric, yeah.
Which you just launched.
Just launched on Monday, yeah. So
why should Conall O'Moran buy a little runabout like that?
Because you're a man of style and taste.
I did look at the colours. I look at anything to do with the cars. I just love. I saw a rose gold.
Yeah.
It's very me, I thought.
Yeah, yeah, no, it would suit you. We can give it to you in cabrio. I have one in the showroom ready to go. No problem at all. Yeah, the Fiat 500. It's an amazing car. There's a few cars in history that just have that iconic status. The Volkswagen Beetle, of course, the Fiat 500, even the Audi TT in design terms. They were standout cars in their day. The Fiat 500 was reinvented just over 14 years ago. Again, you know, safety systems had to change, so you couldn't keep the same body shell, the same technology. So, you know, in order to make motoring much more fit for purpose for the modern era, the car was reinvented about 14 years ago, and it's one of the few car models in history that has maintained, in the main, an upward sales trajectory over its lifespan. Its lifespan of 14 years in its current iteration is quite phenomenal. Most model cars last about 5 to 7 years at a stretch.
And what is it about? It's a beautiful, dinky little thing, but what is it about that gives it that longevity?
Again, it's style, it's representation, it's pop culture position. You know, in movies, it's the south of France, it's Audrey Hepburn in its origins, you know. So again, it's something that's very difficult to quantify other than everybody recognizes it as an iconic vehicle.
Now, you are the super salesman. I mean, people in the industry will identify with that and recognize you as such. How are you going to position your Honda, your Fiat, your Alfa Romeo, your Jeep against each other? Because that's a further complication to your problems, is that you have to outdo your own brands.
And more than that, on the other side of our house, we have, of course, Peugeot, Citroen, Opel, DS as well, all vying for market share.
Oh, before I forget it. Opel. We'll never win the World Cup again. Do you remember we won the World Cup in 1990? That was only because we had Opel on the thing. It's like, we'll never win the Eurovision without Johnny Logan.
So are you
guys ever going to sponsor the football team again?
Well, believe it or not, we signed the biggest car sponsorship deal in Ireland last year when we became the official car partner of the Irish rugby team. So the IRFU, actually, in total. Are we going to get on the jersey again?
World Cup for soccer.
We have to fight. You find the next Jack Charlton and we'll see what we can do, Colin, for sure.
Okay, sorry, now I interrupted you there.
Yep.
You have this extremely broad range of cars of different brands, marks, as they would be correctly called.
Sure.
How do you position them against each other? Who says, does it come from the Gowan board group or does it come from abroad? Who tells you this is premium, this is super premium, this is, I don't know what other terms you use.
Yeah, sure. So again, we're slightly different in that Honda sits outside the Stellantis portfolio. So that's an independent motor manufacturer. And we've been representing those for about 37 years at this point. So they have a very defined strategy in Europe at the moment as they transition again from traditional ICE vehicles into new low emitting vehicles. The Stellantis suite of products, you're absolutely right. It's a huge challenge whereby you put a number of those brands side by side on a forecourt, and how do you position them? And that is the crux of the challenge. Globally, Stellantis will say you can leverage a lot of training, you can leverage a lot of back house and all that sort of stuff. So the business model becomes efficient at that point when you can have one part system, you can have one training system, one dealer management system per se. But the really interesting piece is out front, because you want impassioned people. You want people who want to drive that vehicle, who want to sell that vehicle, and who can identify that in customers. And there should be a really healthy battle in the front end between sales representatives and brand representatives to fight for their product in the open market. And that's what's really exciting.
Is there a different margin, net margin I'm talking about, between the various brands? You know, is it worth your while more to sell a Jeep over an Alfa Romeo?
It's number one on the list. Okay, so it's incredibly difficult, because what happens is as vehicles cycle through their product life cycle, they're on an upswing, they plateau, they start to tail off, and your margin structure reflects that really. And you might be making provisions in the early part of a life because, you know, as cars are petering out, that you might have to support them more. So there's no such thing as a standard margin across the industry.
Great answer. I can't work out how much of a discount I can get.
No, discount. I don't understand you, Conrad. you have to write that down.
Back to my question again. On the forecourt, I walk up, and I see an Alfa, and I see a Fiat, and I see a Jeep, and I may have a preference one, a little over one over the other. Mm. How are you selling me one over the other? Is it because I'm tall, dark, and handsome, or?
Do you know, I think subliminally, you know the answer before you arrive with us.
I do. So what certainly, do you think I'd buy?
What do you Okay, so it's a dangerous one, because the stage one in sales pre-qualification and all these sales training pieces that we're all involved in is pre-qualifying your customer. And you can't pre-qualify your customer without a list of questions. And it starts with the utilitarian stuff. Do you have children? How often do you drive? Do you commute? Where do you park? All of these various different bits and pieces. You get through all the practical bits, and throughout that process, you uncover the stories. My father had a Fiat 127. I remember traveling to Tralee.
131?
131 Merafiori. I remember them well. Yeah.
In gorgeous orange. Yeah. Not.
Yeah. Yeah. So for sure. So as I say, you know, we'll get the practical bit right. That's kind of easy. And through that process, you'll uncover the passion. And people just, whether it's passion or whether it's just the optics of, I really like that car. And most of them come to our outlets and they say, I saw such and such a car in a car park or on the road, or do you sell that, you know? So that's where our marketing or advertising is based, is to try and ignite that little bit of passion. You'll see the glossy ads. They're not there by mistake. They're there to provoke passion.
They're there to trap people like me.
Provoke passion.
Now, I'm going to actually turn the table on you there, because one of the problems, you have an ugly suite on the range, and you know what I'm going to talk about. It's the Jeep. The Jeep is an ugly looking car. Somebody forgot to tell the designers to come in that day. And I don't know how you're going to get out of this one. Yeah. But how do you sell an ugly suite?
How do you sell an ugly suite? Okay. I suppose within your question really is the answer again. It's not for you. Because beauty is in the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So when I talked earlier about brand characteristics and brand personalities, Fiat, you know, if you were to epitomize it, it's Audrey Hepburn on the Amalfi Coast with the roof down and the scarf blowing. If you look at the Jeep brand, it really is embedded in that Willys Jeep from World War II. It has a four-wheel drive system that will crawl up the walls. It's all about utilitarian pieces, and it's very American, and that American stylizing, you know, is jarring to some people here in Europe, but less so. Where Jeep will really get a foothold now is because of their really impressive four-wheel drive system. As most other marks are leaving the four-wheel drive arena because they can't marry that technology. People who need utilitarian vehicles for towing boats, horse boxes, garden trailers, that sort of thing, they're running out of options. And again, they got to go across a muddy field, and there's nothing better than a mud plugger than a Jeep.
Many of the old, in fact, you have a background of when before you joined Gowan, of selling in garages with the old fashioned garage. Many of those garages are now disappearing, and we've become very Americanized here with the
glass palaces.
Yeah, but off like the M50 or off the M4 or off the something. What's the future of selling cars? Will I be clicking on a screen? Because already when I do look at cars, which I do a lot, I can build my fanciest model ever, never having to talk to a salesman or saleswoman either.
Yeah, again, the industry is working very hard to realign itself with new consumer behaviours. So in that instance, in the traditional retail model, I suppose the challenge we have is the internet. It's our best friend and our worst enemy. If I go back to my last time I hosted sales training, I was talking to guys about your average showroom visit per sale was somewhere around 4 or 5. That's down to 1.
Sorry. Again, people used to go in 4 or 5 times, kind of kick the tires,
ask the questions, collect another brochure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that was a defined part of the sales process. Again, part of your pre-qualification.
And now they walk in and say, I want the one in rose gold.
It's about 1.5, yeah. And in a lot of instances, particularly with new technology, most of our customers are incredibly well-read because the technology, the information is at your fingertips. So. Yeah. It's fantastic, but we must embrace that. We can't force traditional retail models in that environment.
There's also a problem for you, is there not, in terms of visibility of the pricing? Because I can see that it's a different price here. Well, obviously the UK, God damn it, because they just get their nicer cars at cheaper. But across Europe, I can see the pricing anywhere, can't I?
Yeah, absolutely. But unfortunately, pricing is actually harmonised across Europe in the main. You know, again, you'll have local promotions and timely promotions, campaign promotions around reg periods. But ultimately, cars are the same price across Europe. The difficulty we have here in Ireland is our taxation system. We have a very onerous VRT system, which can add anything up to 41% additional tax on top of VAT onto a vehicle at the high end. So that's really where it gets skewed heavily. So yeah, so visibility pricing is not an issue with us. You know, you'll see a lot around pricing. You'll see a lot of generic national ads with dealer and delivery charges not included, and that allows your local dealer provide a service level. So he might say, one dealer might include a delivery package, mud flaps and tow bar, and that will be priced into the vehicle. Another dealer might just say, well, we literally wash it, put the plates on, give you a good handover, but we don't add in any other value propositions.
But why do they still charge, I don't know, is it €300 or something? It's up to me. Aggravating, just silly. It's just a little niggle.
Yeah, it is a niggle, and unfortunately, we it wouldn't be right for us to set pricing per se. We can give you recommended retail pricing. We have to allow a dealer represent his own business model and recoup his costs. But also, if we include it in the retail price, that additional cost is subject to VRT, because VRT is based on the open market selling of price of that vehicle. So if we put it on, we got to pay tax on it. Sorry, customer has to pay tax on it. Yeah. So we're trying as an industry to extract as much of the real costs that shouldn't be subject to taxation. We've also lobbied hard as an industry for the last number of years to exclude safety systems from VRT. So if your car came in with additional safety systems, LiDAR, radar, and all that sort of stuff, it's not right that a customer should have to pay VRT on that element, that option, as it were, you know. So yeah, it's just another...
piece. My heart is bleeding here. Yeah, the guys at Gowan asked me to ask you that in a year's time, what will you expect as being your, if you've been successful? In other words, when you go for your review, what? Because again, I do see that I'm kind of, my head is a little bit fuddled by this, is that you've got these brands and you've got to make them all work.
Yeah.
Because if you prefer one over the other, and I don't know which ones I prefer, sure. I'd be promoting those.
Sure.
You'd be given out to.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be nice.
It's the real interview question, isn't it? What does success look like? You know, so what does success look like, I suppose, for our division? It's going to be an interesting year. So we're very lucky. We have really, really strong brands. We've phenomenal brand recognition. 2023, Fiat will celebrate 100 years in Ireland.
That's great.
And everybody fantastic. I speak to speaks about, you know, some level of Fiat in their life, in their family and so on and so forth. So the easy bit is done in that sense. We've got to turn that into a viable business. We've an obligation to our dealer network, which is small at the moment. It will expand. We've got to get production through. Production is a massive problem at the moment. And we've got to build more current awareness around our product offering. And again, as I said to my team recently, we've inherited these brands now on the crest of a slump. So we're facing the stars.
The only way is
the only way is up, and we are unleashing a fabulous raft of new product, really exciting product, and our job is to engage the customer.
So is everybody else.
Yeah, but I there are a lot of maybe new kids on the block. Okay, maybe brands without that level of heritage. Yeah. With fairly bland and vanilla versions of that technology. But what Fiat, Alfa Romeo and Jeep are bringing to the marketplace in terms of this transition piece is hugely exciting.
Two final questions. One is, John Saunders, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Okay. The indulgent answer is one of my sporting heroes, but that would be that.
Well,
would
go
be
on,
unfair.
You're allowed. Go on. Who would that be?
Well, it'd have to be Senna. You know, I think a guy who could exist in a very competitive world, and he came to it okay through kart racing, but he took on the system and he was just a raw talent, and he was everything that epitomized sport. He was a gentleman on top of it all, and a general good guy. So that would be an indulgent hire. If I was to be quite cold and business about it, you have to look at some of our industry visionaries. In fairness, actually, the CEO of Stellantis at the moment is a guy called Carlos Tavares. And he has a phenomenal vision.
You're not going to choose the boss. That is
I'm
sad.
Actually going to choose the boss, because the boss I'm going to choose, if I was being absolutely honest, and this is a real nod, I'd hire my wife, because she's far better at everything I do.
Well, you better give her a proper name, a full name.
So that'll be my wife, Brenda.
And does Brenda have a surname?
Brenda Saunders. Saunders. No, she's Saunders, okay. Yeah.
Okay, well, Brenda, you're hired, but you probably know that anyway. And she's going to be back at home. Jeez, what's he done to me? Now, the second question I have for you is that you know that the show is sponsored by De Facto Shaving Solution.
Mm.
And what have you got on your face?
Mm.
You know that Tom Murphy, the boss, is going to be so unhappy, because what are the chances that you're going to use his gorgeous product?
Well, thankfully, this is radio, audio, not visual. So in the old Only Fools and Horses joke, who put that man's head on upside down? So I've plenty of beard and not too much on top. So
because as always, the great business stories that you've just heard from John Saunders and others there are brought to you by De Facto, which is, as John knows, it's like his brands. It's the world's greatest all-natural shaving oil. Get it at defactoshave.com. John Saunders, thanks for joining us on that great business show, even.
Super. Thank you very much, Conal.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make De Facto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25-milliliter bottle of De Facto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DeFactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
That great business show.
Now that COVID looks like it's finally on the wane, we will look back on many weird things we did during lockdowns, like queuing for toilet paper and fist bumping each other like demented American football players. And I'm glad to see the back of both of those. Another one, which was a bit weird, was the palpable anger generated by sea swimmers who chose to wear a product called dry robes. I say by them, but it was actually against them. Sea swimming kept thousands of people sane, and dry robes kept those same thousands of people alive when they came out of Ireland's freezing seawater. So I never really got what all the fuss was all about. But all of the fuss was great news for one Irish brand, Orca Boards, an Irish brand that designs its products, including paddle boards, changing robes, and most recently swimwear, right here in Ireland. Orca Board was one of the winners of the Arnott's competition, featured by us a couple of times here on That Great Business Show, that allowed them to sell their products in that iconic store. Kevin Darcy is co-founder of Orca Boards and joins me now on That Great Business Show. Kevin, you're welcome.
Thanks, Connell. Amazing to be here.
Kevin, tell us the backstory. I've just been laughing. What do you really do?
I suppose to answer that, I'm an accountant by trade.
Auditor.
An auditor, yeah.
If you listen to That Great Business Show, I sigh when I hear auditors. Do your pals all go, oh God, here comes Kevin again, he's an auditor?
I try not to mention auditing a lot when I'm out with friends.
But to be fair to you, you have done well, because you and your recently, not quite betrothed, but recently engaged partner, is that you have now set up this business on the side, I suppose, and it's looking very, very healthy.
Yeah, Alana is probably the founder and definitely the co-owner of the business. And I suppose it was just over 12 months ago we started a company called Orca Board.
And why is an auditor setting up a business which is quite sexy, really? I mean, it's paddle boards and swimwear and stuff like that.
I suppose for us, we started paddleboarding about 10 years ago. We were in Spain together, and we saw these giant surfboard-looking objects on the beach, and we said, we have to give that a try. So we went out on them, and we were immediately hooked. There's something about being either in or on the ocean that's quite calming.
I so agree. I mean, honestly, it is, if you haven't done it, you're mad, because you should. It's something that, I don't know, something in us, in our DNA.
Yeah,
we should be sitting
in
the water.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Not
yeah.
too much effort, just easy.
But then coming home to Ireland after that holiday, it was a bit impractical to own a 13-foot solid kind of paddleboard. Where would we store it? How would we transport it? And so that dream kind of faded out for a few years, until around about 5 years ago, when the inflatable paddleboard market started to take off, or to inflate, I suppose.
An auditor making jokes. Oh no, you've heard it here first.
Apologies for that.
We love a good pun.
So it was at that point, it was actually realistic for us to own our own boards and to go out on the weekends and be able to store them and transport them and all those issues that come with, that come with holding a 13-foot board versus something that wraps up into a backpack. So it was probably 2 years ago now, when COVID really started to hit Ireland and the country looked like it was locking down, and we went to upgrade our equipment. And we realised that the price of the paddleboards has increased dramatically. The quality has stayed the same, if not decreased. And we thought, you know, this is going to be a huge hindrance to people getting involved in the sport and getting out in the ocean. So we decided to design our own board, taking the features we love from all the different boards we'd seen over the past 10 years and combine them into one Orca board.
So you did actually do a bit of designing, because I was a wee bit skeptical. I thought, you know, designed in Ireland, oh yeah, yeah. You ring up China and say, would you ever ship us over a few Orca boards? But no, you actually did a bit of designing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of technical specifications that go into designing a board. What length do you want? What width? What thickness? What kind of EVA pad do you want on the surface? What features do you want? So one unique feature is they can be converted into a kayak through the use of extra D-rings on the surface of the board. So kind of get...
Oh, very technical.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I was looking at your website on, it's actually very affordable.
$499? Yeah, $499. So,
that's not a bad entry price to zip down onto the ocean and you're there. No motor, no nothing, just a little bit of paddle.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of our key kind of points that we wanted to achieve when we were designing the board, which is how are we going to make it a price that's affordable? Because if you look at the UK market for a red paddleboard, you're looking at double.
Why?
Marketing.
Really?
Yeah.
Simple as
marketing.
You, as an auditor, haven't seen the benefits of margin, and you could have a dirty, great, big margin just by copying the UK.
You could, but I think ethically you want to create a great product and sell that at a price that's fair for both the consumer and the company. And that is what will gain lasting business.
Okay, that seems like fair enough, and I'm beginning to like this already. So let's move on to the lovely robes, your Orca board robes, because we'll get onto the whole Orca name in a minute. Was it just me, or I was reading the newspapers, people hitting other people because they were wearing another brand. Maybe it was you hitting them because they were wearing another brand. They are so bloody practical.
They are.
You get out of your car or whatever, walk down into the water, walk out, put it on into the car again because it's all waterproof.
Exactly. And it's a great way to actually change at the beach and not expose yourself to everyone down at the 40 foot or down at a FICO bats. So it's a really practical piece of equipment that came to popularity mainly during the pandemic again when people took to the sea.
So what was the aggro about?
I think the notices that went up in around Dunleary for the dry robe types, I think people might have felt that they owned the sea around that area and probably didn't like the influx of people that discovered it during their 5K restriction or their county restriction. So I think the increase in traffic and things like that, it just annoyed people.
And it was a bloody godsend to you guys, was it?
I wouldn't say a godsend. I think the pandemic was difficult for everyone, but there was a lot of benefits, I think, that everyone discovered during that. And that's getting back to nature and getting back to either hiking or sea swimming and everything like that. So every cloud has a silver lining, I would say.
So did sales go through the roof, and could you source supply and all? Because again, they're not manufactured in Ireland, but you can personalise them and all that. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So we have a commercial embroidery machine, which we operate ourselves to put names, initials.
The pair of you?
Yeah.
You work pretty hard, don't you?
I mean, there was a time there where there was nothing else to do. So,
No, you're meant to be working, and I won't name the company, but you're meant to be working for that company. Were you embroidering on their time?
Of course not, no. it goes back to the ethics and everything that we, how we operate and where we operate. But the product that we designed is called Blubber. And we thought Blubber was a good name because...
No, but that's different to your... robe, isn't it?
No, the robe is...
Is that a blubber?
Yeah, it's blubber.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the reason we thought blubber was a good name is because blubber keeps whales and dolphins warm in the water. So we thought blubber keeps you warm.
Yeah, but you know what else blubber is? it's what everybody doesn't want to have.
But everyone has. Okay. So, you know, embrace it.
It is a lovely name.
Yeah.
Tell us about your problems with trademarks and names, because it doesn't matter. If you go on to a website like Black Knight, where I would go and look at domain names, there's somebody or some persons worldwide who've just taken every word in the English language, mixed them up, and you cannot buy a dot whatever for love nor money.
So I think if you go on to any word in the dictionary and type .com after it, you'll find that it's been owned by GoDaddy or one of those US companies who just routinely snaps up domains. So we needed, I suppose, going back to the different brands we operate, we have Orca Board for our paddle boards, Blubber for everything that keeps you warm, changing robes and wetsuits coming shortly, and then Beluga for our swimwear. We tried to have different brand names for the reason that Cadbury have 50 different types of bars on the market. It's diversification of risk. So if there's ever a problem with one bar, they can just pull that bar and, you know, they have 49 other bars that you can choose from in the store. You won't even know you're buying a Cadbury bar. And that's probably the reason. And then it was easier to get with our spelling of the likes of Beluga to get the trademarks that we needed over things like that.
Because you used double O or triple O or something like that, didn't you?
Double O. We spelled it just a little bit different to the Wales,
which is U.
Yeah. And then Blubber as well. I was actually quite surprised there wasn't a trademark over Blubber. And so we were able to get European trademarks across all of our range.
This sounds like a growing business for you, even though it is a side hustle at the moment. Which takes precedence? Where's it going to go?
Side hustle is a loose term, I would say. I'm employed to work 7 hours a day, and the other 17 hours, I would say, are kind of either focused on this or dreaming about this. So,
where did that motivation come from? Was there entrepreneurship in the family, or
no? And it's still only ourselves. We own all of the company, and yeah. I suppose.
And then she's marrying into the company.
No. I think I'm marrying into her company. But if I think about what drove it, I suppose we always wanted to have a business. To combine that with your passion, we're very lucky to be able to do that. And then we're even more lucky to be able to work with the likes of Arnott's or 53 Degrees North in order to actually to sell this product and to try build a brand in Ireland.
How did the Arnott's experiment go?
Brilliant.
They told me, I think that they have 1 million visitors between November and the end of Christmas or the end of November, December.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. And you can really see that when if you walk into that store in December, it's crammed with people, which is fantastic because retail, I think, has suffered over the last while. And it's great to see people back in the stores and on the streets. But the one thing, the main thing it gave us was an ability to speak to customers in front of you, looking at your product and then telling you what else they want to see from you.
It's so important, isn't it? That is key.
Yeah, so every day we were there, it was like a market research project where you have people coming up, browsing, trying on, discussing, thankfully buying, and then...
What did you learn? Some little insights. Are you going to give a bigger range, a larger range, a taller range? Or what?
Yeah, definitely. The range is expanding. I mentioned wetsuits a minute ago. That's something that people wanted from us.
And what's going to be different about them?
Same as all of our other products. We'll look at what's out there and we'll try make it better at a more affordable price.
But you haven't designed it yet?
We have, yeah.
When will it hit the shops?
It'll be here for the summer. It took a lot of trial and error on something like a wetsuit, the type of seam to use, the type of material to use.
I love it.
Whether you can use a recyclable material on a wetsuit and how would you do that? How long would it last? And that kind of...
Because again, your swimwear is recyclable and has been used from previously recycled product, isn't that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it uses a material called Reprieve, which is a US material from... a really great company who collects plastic bottles and breaks them back down into pellets, takes those pellets, turns them into yarn, and then can make clothes out of that. So it's a really innovative material.
And who's the brains behind the operation? And I'll tell you why I'm asking this is one of your products, we're all familiar with the Christmas jumper. You have Christmas swimming togs. I thought that was really clever.
Well, one of the things that Ireland does on Christmas Day is they go swimming. We jump into the freezing cold water.
Be careful with this word, we. I love water, love swimming, will not go into the Irish water. It's too ... freezing. But anyway, that's only me. But who came up with the idea of the brilliant idea, great idea?
I suppose we wanted something in Arnott's at Christmas that was a little bit different.
Yeah.
And so we said... Christmas jumpers are a huge thing in Ireland. They took off many years ago now, and there's so many different iterations of them. What else do people do at Christmas? They go swimming.
Yeah, and, that's a lovely idea. You still haven't told me who came up. Was it you or Alana? Or did you see it somewhere else? Maybe you nicked it as an
idea.
No,
I would say no, that was 100% unique. I can't think of...
I'd love if you were able to trademark or keep that to yourselves. I think just it's clever. Just a lovely, simple idea.
Yeah, and yeah, trademarking is definitely one of the things we upskilled in. I think two of our robes in the Blubber range, they're kind of titanium is the name. They're kind of shiny, and we were able to get Irish trademarks on them, which is, again, important for protecting something that you design from scratch and you come up with. And so that's really important.
So instead of watching TV or watching spreadsheets, do you two sit down and look at design all day, every day, or sit on the couch holding hands looking at designs?
No, thankfully. I suppose you have to... A really important thing when we're designing anything is we want to design for everyone. And this was really important to Alana when we were doing the swimwear, that she designed a swimsuit that could be worn by every woman, and that every woman could feel comfortable in it. And that all comes down then to things like the hip line, where do you draw that, and the arms. And there's no other company making swimwear out there for the Irish Sea. I'll tell you that, you know, it's bikinis or it's, you know, interesting looking one pieces and things like that. So to have kind of long sleeve, you know, a flattering cut on the hip.
Swimwear has long sleeve.
Yeah.
Okay. I wear those myself.
And then a zip down the middle. So they're a really flattering design that we kind of came up with. And it has a bit of a collar as well. So kind of it looks well.
I love the idea of this young lad, auditor, who's talking to me about a hip line and about where it cuts.
I say this is incredibly important to Alana because these are issues obviously that women have faced when they buy swimwear. I think as a guy, we probably go in and grab a pair of shorts and that's it.
Yeah.
But it was great to be able to do that, and the feedback was fantastic, and the fact we went up to either a double or a triple XL as well made it very inclusive for all women to be able to wear this.
What's the future?
Good question. I suppose when I look at where we are now and where we want to be, I look at Enterprise Ireland's website and I see they call it a high potential startup, something that can get $1 million in revenue after 3 years and 10 employees. We did just under 300,000 last year, which is our first year. So we're really happy with that.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have a full year in earnouts this year. So we're hoping for growth. We're hoping to kind of get to around about $500,000 next year. And hopefully hit that 1 million then after the 3 years. That's the target at the moment.
Fantastic. Love it. Great story. That's even better. I'd read about you and obviously been in contact with you. But it's even better now that I know the hip line.
Very important.
So congratulations to both you and Alana. You better give Alana her surname, her shout out.
Pryor. Yep.
Alana Pryor. Okay, congratulations to Alana Pryor and to Kevin Darcy. But you still have another question to answer. Hire in a heartbeat. Who would... Kevin, hire in a heartbeat.
This was the most difficult question that I thought I was going to be faced with and took a lot of thought. I was thinking of going down the kind of humorous answer with someone like Matt Damon, who did a lot, obviously, for the swim community during lockdown. But I actually went with Niall Horgan at the end of it, who is one of the co-founders and I think CEO of Gym and Coffee.
Oh, we have. Yeah, we have had Gym and Coffee on a previous radio show, but we've also had them on here. I think I remember we're at episode 72, and if you multiply that out by three or four companies per podcast, we're up at way over a couple hundred now, so it's going well. So will you come back in again to us next year and tell us about the new range? I presume this, you're forever thinking of new product, are you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're thinking about, you know, summer in our head, summer has gone, and you're thinking about next winter already, and then when summer comes, you're thinking about winter and next summer already. You kind of have to plan that far ahead.
And you better give a shout out for your website.
As I mentioned, our products are available either in Arnott's or 53 Degrees North and also online at orcavoard.ie.
Orca, as in orca the whale, board.ie. And that is it, unfortunately, for now from That Great Business Show, episode 72. So please, please, please share, like, retweet this podcast with all of your connections on social media. And when you do, you look smart and we look happy. And do it now before you forget. It's just the click button away from you, but it means commercial success for us. Also, do subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform, and that makes sure that Ireland's best business podcast is always to hand. And my thanks to the team here, as usual, at the Dublin Podcast Studios, including today's sound engineer. He's a newbie. He's Mark McCarthy. So thank you very much to Mark. And then Peter Rice, who takes over every week to make sure we are the world's best sounding podcast. And we are here to help businesses just like yours. So if there are issues or topics you would like us to cover, contact us using our favorite LinkedIn page, where we have lots of chats with businesses and business owners. And if you're planning an ad campaign, we would love to help. Join companies like Big Red Cloud and Virgin Media, as well as organizations like ISMI and Udaros na Gaeltachta, who recognize it's the great way to talk to Ireland's SMEs. And as always, The Great Business Show and their insights on are brought to you by that great maker of shaving oil, De Facto Shave, made in Mayo, sold worldwide. But they won't be selling it very much of it to Kevin Darcy, because for the second person on this podcast, he's got a beard. Boo to beards, that's what we say. But I'm sure he'll find some use for it. Maybe you shave your legs for your paddle boarding or something, no?
I don't.
No, okay. Sorry, Tom Murphy owner. Anyway, it is sold worldwide, and our thanks to them. And so from me, Conal O'Moran, Mavuichas, Huiv, Erfad, Agus, Slán, Tamil.